Hello, everyone. Welcome to this special bonus episode of the Theology Mom podcast. I did a live stream earlier today over on the Center for Biblical Unity where I did an explainer video on the word diversity. And really, my goal with this is to help give you some practical information and help you make sense of the very confusing sea of terms and conversations that are had regularly about the term diversity. What does it mean? How is it used? And give you some practical help to help you have better conversations with your friends who are advocates of diversity. I hope you find it helpful and that you will share it with a friend, a pastor, a ministry leader, somebody in your sphere of influence. Hopefully they will find the conversation helpful. Also, let me know if you'd like to see more of this content. I can do another teaching on diversity next week over at the Center for Biblical Unity. Thanks so much. I hope you enjoy it. Hey, everyone. Welcome to a family meeting. I have something to share with you, and hopefully you will find it helpful. It'll probably end up being a two-part teaching, so, you know, look for me next week. Okay, let's get started. So I have entitled this The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly of Diversity Hiring. And this is going to kind of walk us through how to think about the issue of diversity. What does it mean? What do they tell us it means? What does it actually mean in the everyday world? And then, you know, depending on how all of this goes, maybe I will do an additional teaching about a better vision for diversity hiring. So make sure to send in your feedback and let us know if you found this teaching helpful, then I will continue the series. But the good, the bad, and the ugly of diversity hiring. And this is an issue that is very important because I've chronicled before in previous family meetings, we've talked about hiring issues, we've talked about diversity issues, and we've kind of done a little bit of content here and there, but this is really the first time where I'm going to try to offer kind of an end-to-end explanation of things. And so I've got some slides. So if you're listening to this on the podcast and you're finding it difficult to follow along, hop on YouTube so you can see the slides. But if you hear the word diversity, what do you think about? Is it a positive word? Is it a negative word? What does it really mean? This is a very important question because, as with anything, you want to start with a definition. And many people, when they think of the word diversity, some people think of it in a very positive way, and other people think of it in a very negative way. And some people are just not sure what to think. Hopefully we can help those people on all sides of the conversation. Hopefully this little explainer video will offer some clarity. Well, many people have been commenting more recently on the University of Florida. They recently eliminated their diversity department. This is a little write-up here. From the student newspaper, I believe, but it could just be a local newspaper from Florida. Yeah, it's called The Alligator. And the headline reads, University of Florida eliminates diversity, what's known and what remains unclear. And it says, faculty and students at University of Florida have wondered what will happen to the university's diversity, equity, and inclusion programs since Governor DeSantis banned state DEI funding to Florida universities in May of 2023. 9 months later, they have their answer. The university has announced it has closed the office of the chief diversity officer and halted DEI-focused contracts with outside vendors in a memo published March 1st. So this is just last week. The university also fired 13 full-time DEI positions and ended 15 administrative appointments for faculty, according to the University of Florida spokesperson Cynthia Roldan. Now, this is a pretty big story because we're hearing this more and more of businesses, universities actually reducing or eliminating their diversity departments. Now, I know that the vast majority of universities, both Christian and secular, still have diversity departments. I think I read a statistic. It's like 65 or 70% of universities have a diversity department. And this is something I've talked quite a lot about. As you are looking for a Christian university, one of the things to look for is whether or not they have a chief diversity officer or a whole diversity department. How well is it staffed? This can really give you an indication of how bought in they are to the ideology. But there are some movements now to shut down diversity departments. And this University of Florida is just one of the latest examples that I've seen. Now, when we talk about diversity, there's going to be some skepticism of what diversity really is, and is it harmful? This is from a website called Resume Builder, which is a site to help people who are looking for jobs, giving them a lot of tips. This is an interesting little article. The headline reads, 1 in 6 hiring managers have been told to stop hiring white men. 1 in 6. It's an interesting number. 52% of hiring managers believe their company practices reverse discrimination in hiring. This is an interesting statistic, I think, that 52%, about 50%, believe that their company, the hiring managers, believe that their company is engaging in reverse discrimination. 1 in 6 have been told to deprioritize hiring white men. 53% believe they could be fired if they don't hire enough diverse employees. 70% believe their company has DEI initiatives in place just for the sake of appearances. So I don't know what to make of all of this. You can go vet the study yourself of whether or not you think that this is helpful information. But I do think it reflects a sentiment that's out there that diversity is a code word for we don't hire white people. And that is a perception. There's a perception by others that diversity is just virtue signaling. We have this department, we have this person, but it's not really making the kind of meaningful progress that we want. So people are split over the issue of diversity. I'm going to show you another article here related to hiring. This one, yeah, is from Bloomberg. And this was, I think, a year or two ago. Yeah, updated September 2023. The headline reads, Corporate America promised to hire a lot more people of color. It actually did. The year after Black Lives Matter protests, the S&P 100 added more than 300,000 jobs. 94% of those jobs went to people of color. So this is a whole summary of this. And I just think this is another example of a question that many people don't want to ask out loud. But they're wondering, is diversity a code word for we don't hire white people? There seems to be some evidence, and we could debate that evidence, of where are the jobs going? Who are the people that are being hired? There's also a lot of money behind diversity. I'm going back to the slides now. This is from the University of Virginia. I think this was just out yesterday on the End Wokeness, I think, Twitter feed. He had this little meme of what the pay, the salary is for all of these DEI officers at the University of Virginia. And the top pay was the senior associate dean and global chief diversity officer, 450,000 almost $452,000 a year. Then there was another VP for DEI and community partnerships, $400,000 a year. Chief Diversity and Community Engagement Officer, who's also a professor in urology, $312,000 a year. I don't know. There's maybe 10 diversity staff on here. They're into it, you know. They're into just the salaries for a couple million dollars, all right? And so when people look at this, they're wondering, like, this is my tax dollars at work. Do I want to pay for diversity? Now, obviously, some people would answer that question, yes, I do. I think this is a worthwhile thing. You know, maybe we can debate as to how many diversity officers are too many. Other people say, no, I don't want my tax money going for this. So when we think about defining our terms, what is diversity exactly? You know, how do we define it? This is tricky because I think that there is an acceptance of the idea of diversity and that it is being implemented as what I call the praxis of diversity into student recruitment and staff hiring. Sometimes it's used as a foundation for staff promotions and also for board recruitment. Diversity is largely seen as a positive in most environments, and that it is seen as something that should be looked at and embedded to varying degrees within a company or a school or nonprofit ministry or that sort of a thing. But defining it is a little more difficult. I'm just going to look at two definitions. And this, what I want you to see is how important it is when you run into this word in the workplace to ask for a definition. So this one is from a website called Kika, which is from their glossary. And Kika, as far as I can tell, is another hiring resourcing website. It's like an HR website for people who have companies and they want to outsource some of their HR responsibilities to this Kika organization. So here is their definition. Diversity in recruitment, also known as diversity hiring, is a hiring process that is free from biasness. It's a pretty big claim. The process makes sure that no one is judged based on age, race, gender, sexual orientation, sexual preferences, or any other characteristics that are irrelevant to the job profile. A more modern take on the idea of diversity has been adopted to encompass other groups, such as women, military veterans, and individuals from the alphabet community. It involves actively hiring candidates from diversified backgrounds and ensuring that their talent and skills are being analyzed instead of their backgrounds. So in this definition, a couple of things to draw your attention to. They are still wanting to hold on to the idea of skills and talent as being a foundation for hiring. So they're trying to put forward the idea of we're just broadening our talent pool, broadening our recruitment tool, our recruitment pool, okay? We're not front-loading, looking for diversity. No, we're still trying to hire according to talent and skills. We're just trying to broaden the pool and hire without bias. And so candidates that maybe we would otherwise exclude because of their backgrounds, we're trying to find a way to include them into our possible pool of qualified candidates. Okay, that is how they are defining diversity. Let's look at another definition. This one is from another HR website called ideal.com. Diversity hiring is hiring based on merit. This is very important. with special care taken to ensure procedures have reduced biases. Now, this one's a little more realistic. They're not saying we're bias-free like the previous one. They're saying they're trying to get to reduced biases related to a candidate's age, race, gender, religion, sexual orientation, and other personal characteristics that are unrelated to their job performance. So what they're saying is for somebody maybe in his mid-50s who's trying to get a job in the realm of media, well, media sometimes tilts toward the young, and there's age discrimination. Ideally, according to this definition, the middle-aged man would be able to be considered for that job in a fairly unbiased way based on the merits of his talents and skills. And we're not going to skew younger to think that only young people have the fresh vision and skills to do what's needed in the media field. Okay, that would be an example of that. Let's continue. In the United States, many organizations follow the Federal Equal Opportunity Commission guidelines. Confusion over diversity hiring sometimes lies in the mistaken perception that the goal of diversity recruitment is to increase workplace diversity for the sake of diversity. The goal of diversity hiring is to identify, and this is the key, the goal is to identify and reduce potential biases in sourcing, screening, and shortlisting candidates that may be ignoring, turning off, or accidentally discriminating against qualified, diverse candidates. This is, in my opinion, the worthy vision of diversity. This is a pretty good definition. We want to reduce prejudices that would inadvertently shrink our talent pool. We want to try to hire impartially and not exclude people who may be qualified but overlooked. This, in my opinion, is the best vision of diversity. I want to find the best people I can as a hiring manager. I want to find the people I think can do the job. And if there's somebody that I'm overlooking or that I have a potential blind spot to, I want to make sure that I'm including them in my potential pool of talent and applicants, okay? And that everybody gets a fair shot if they're qualified. All right, this is what I call the worthy vision, the noble vision of diversity. So here's some key questions that I think go along with this worthy version of diversity goals. How do we increase hiring and retention of people from diverse backgrounds or ages who have the talents that we need to help our school or our ministry or our business succeed? Do we need to work on reducing prejudicial attitudes or behavior in our workplace culture toward fellow employees who might belong to various cultures or social groups? For example, does your workplace skew younger? And then you have a couple of older people. Is there a prejudice toward older people? Is there a prejudice toward Christians or a prejudice toward Muslims? These are the kinds of questions that we might ask. Some more questions that we might ask with these worthy diversity goals is, how do we enhance cooperation among all our employees so that we can work toward the school or the ministry or the business's mission, vision, and values? How could we potentially diversify our recruitment or retention strategies? Are there potential qualified candidates that we are missing out on due to cultural differences or recruiting blind spots? I think that these are helpful and meaningful questions. Let me just give you one example from my own life that happened recently. From time to time, Monique and I, when we travel for various reasons that I won't go into, I select to travel disabled. And this requires us to use the services at the airport for disabled travelers. Now, Often I've noticed, we've noticed that in many cities, the people who are hired to help with the disabled travelers are immigrants. Now, it's very interesting because they are often immigrants that are all of the same nationality in that area. Like when we went to one airport in Florida, nearly all of the assistants that would help the disabled passengers were all from Haiti. They all were Haitian immigrants. And another airport we went to, they all seemed to be from Somalia. We went to another airport and they were all from kind of the Middle East. I don't know why this is. I don't know who hires these people. And they all seem to be for one particular company in most cases as we fly around the country. Monique and I are like, we would really love to start a business doing this because we have so many thoughts about this particular service because we've used it several times. Anyways, I digress. So recently we were in an airport that did not use this big service company for their staffing of the disabled. It was a smaller airport. And they staffed it themselves. And the young man who helped us introduces himself as being disabled. He says, as he's meeting us for the first time, he says, "Have you ever heard of autism?" And we both said, "Yes." And he says, "Well, I'm autistic and so are my two brothers. I'm happy to help you today. We're going to get through the TSA really fast. Let's rock and roll." That's what he liked to say. He said, "Let's rock and roll" a few times. And everybody he met, he had this little spiel because he happened to meet me first. And then he met Monique and he gave her exactly the same spiel. But we noticed that his coworkers were really kind of bullying toward him. And he did a great job with helping us get through TSA and getting all our baggage through. And so here's someone who otherwise might be overlooked from a talent pool. It seems like the company on the national level who hires a lot of these people for the jobs, developing the disabled in airports, they tend to only hire immigrants. I don't know why this is. But at this airport where it was local, they were hiring, you know, just people who were a little bit more diversified, a little bit more like they were just doing the job there. And this young man might not be able to otherwise be considered for a job because of being on the spectrum. And he did a great job. His performance and his talent, he did a great job. They all have the standard things where they have to take certain notes and write things down and help you do certain tasks. And he was able to perform all of those tasks and he loved his job. And he told us how much he loved his job, how meaningful it was to him that he got to work. And he was so proud of the fact that one of his brothers also worked at the airport and he was also disabled. And he was just thrilled that the airport gave him and his brother a way to make a meaningful living even though they were disabled. And that was just how he was relating to it. And I thought this is a beautiful example of the right kind of diversity. This is what I call the noble vision, that it is shining a light and opening the pool for talent for people who otherwise may not be seen in the hiring process, but are still able to do the job. And I think that that is a version of it that could be considered to be consistent with the Christian worldview. And I think that this is the most noble and impartial way of thinking about diversity. Opening it up for older applicants, creating a culture where we're not going to pit ages against each other or classes against each other. I think that's a very noble vision. So if you talk to somebody who is for diversity hiring, they are likely to put forward this definition. They are likely to tell you, you know, we're not trying to undermine merit. We're just trying to open the pool. So when you are engaged in a conversation with somebody who is for diversity, you need to understand that there is a version of this that may actually be helpful and useful if, and somebody made a comment to this effect, if done by ethical people, and that there are ethical standards and safeguards in place. And I agree with that. Unfortunately, in our everyday experience, this is not usually how diversity shows up. And that's what I want to get to, is that the problem is diversity usually shows up quite a bit differently than this noble vision. So I'm going to show you just a few examples of this. This first one is from the Walt Disney Company. No, it's a link. It's a PDF. There it is. So this is from, it says in the top here, it's from the ABC Entertainment, and it's inclusion standards. This is a couple of years old, but I don't see that anybody from ABC or Disney is saying that this is fake or not real. This seems to be real. So they have different standards A, B, and C, and D for different areas where they are trying to do diversity. And this is how this shows up. It just seems like to be a bunch of quotas. 50% more of the regular or recurring characters should come from underrepresented groups. And we will define underrepresented groups in just a moment. Actors, 50% or more of regular or recurring actors come from underrepresented groups. Episodic storytelling, ongoing meaningful integration of underrepresented groups in episodic themes and narratives. Let's scroll down to standard C, I believe. 50% or more of line producer or production department heads, such as the director of photography, composer, costume designer, editor, music supervisor, come from underrepresented groups. 50% or more of the overall crew or project staff come from underrepresented groups. Okay, you can look for this document online, but scroll all the way to the bottom for me, Bob, in the teeny tiny print. Yeah. It says context is critical when evaluating if a group is underrepresented. Anyone involved in hiring decisions is prohibited from asking candidates and talent about their, now get this, their actual or perceived race, religion, color, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, military or veteran status, age, disability, or any other legally protected categories. So even if you have a perception about your gender or your military status or your religion, I guess, that they can't ask you about that. I find that highly interesting. But in my opinion, a lot of this description here is really just a bunch of quotas, 50% of this and 50% of that. And when that comes into diversity hiring, then the question, it raises a lot of questions are, wait a minute, are we shifting away from the noble vision of diversity into quotas? And what if we don't have enough applicants in the underrepresented groups who have the talent and skills and merit to do the job? Will we then lower the standards in order to meet these quotas? And this is the kind of diversity hiring that we might call tokenism, where a person of color, a minority person, feels like they've been hired just because of their color. And this is one of the unfortunate versions of diversity. Let me give you another example here. This is from a newsletter that this chief diversity officer sent out two staff at the university. Oh, I think it was at Johns Hopkins. That's what it was. It's at Johns Hopkins University. And this is from January. So it's just a couple of months ago. And so she was talking about some MLK events. And then she has a diversity word of the month. It's like the little educational piece in her email blast to the faculty. And the word of the month was privileged. And privilege, she defines as a set of unearned benefits given to people who are in a specific social group. And then she lists examples of these groups: white people, able-bodied, heterosexual, cisgender people, males, Christians, middle or owning class people. In other words, you own a house or you own property, middle-aged people, English-speaking people. Well, this caused quite a controversy, because the idea of saying that people in dominant groups often believe they have earned privileges they enjoy, or that everyone should have access to these privileges only if they have worked to earn them. She says privileges are unearned and granted to people in the dominant groups, whether they want those privileges or not, and regardless of their stated intent. This little newsletter started a cascade of events that resulted in her leaving her position just yesterday. And they didn't really say she was fired. She's still going to have a faculty position there at Johns Hopkins, but they are hiring for her position. And for many people, this is diversity in the real world. In the real world, diversity is about dividing people according to privileges, or being privileged or part of privileged groups, or being in underrepresented or marginalized groups. And again, we're going to define all of that in just a moment. Let's give one more example here. This is recently, this was the president of Harvard, Claudine Gay. And it was discovered recently, I think this was in December 18th, 2023, that a good portion of her doctoral dissertation had been plagiarized. Part of it, she had plagiarized from our friend, Dr. Carol Swain, who was also an African-American scholar. Dr. Claudine Gay is an African-American woman and was the president of Harvard until fairly recently. But what was interesting was that there was a lot of conversation about, are they giving her a pass on plagiarism because she's in a protected, underrepresented class? And there was even some conversation by Harvard about redefining the word plagiarism. This is from the editorial board at the Boston Globe. The headline read, "Did Claudine Gay plagiarize or not? Harvard should be clear." The university's governing board said a review of the president's work had found instances of, quote, "inadequate citation," unquote, but also that she had it violated, quote, "standards for research misconduct." Huh? What? And this was the question: is either it's plagiarism or it's not. We can't start redefining plagiarism. But the question is, well, was she a diversity hire? Is she protected? Are there different rules that apply to her because of being a member of an underrepresented group? This is how diversity shows up in the real world. People have questions. Are there two rules that apply, one for white people and one for minorities? Is there preference given to minorities? Are we really hiring for merit? What if there aren't enough qualified candidates to get us to 50%? These are the real questions that people have about diversity, and feeling like diversity often ends up creating a system that doesn't accomplish the noble vision that its advocates say that it's about. and that there is this disconnect between the noble vision of diversity and how it ends up showing up in real life. This has brought some to the point, like Elon Musk, who are saying things like DEI must, D-I-E, it must die. The point was to end discrimination, not replace it with different discrimination. And this is increasingly becoming the sentiment of many people. They are starting to equate DEI or diversity initiatives with really just being a cover story for reverse discrimination. Now, let me go into a little bit more detail of what these underrepresented groups actually are. What does this mean when they talk about underrepresented groups? And I'm going to call this the critical social theories vision for diversity. That's what CST stands for. Critical social theories. What is that vision of diversity? It's not really the noble vision necessarily that we saw in the first half of this teaching. This is based on the what we often call, Monique and I, as we travel and speak, we call it the matrix of oppression. And that's where we look at targeted social groups versus privileged social groups. So here is that matrix of oppression. This is a very helpful concept for you to understand. Now, you'll see here a number of columns, and you'll see these social identity categories of race, sex, gender, sexual orientation, class, ability or disability, religion, and age. And these are the things that we saw in a lot of the language of the definitions of diversity. So what are these underrepresented groups? It's this column here. It's the fourth column over in our matrix of oppression. It's called targeted social groups. This is what many of in the diversity community call underrepresented groups. And these are what we might also call minorities. Asian, Black, Latino, Native Americans. Now, keep in mind that this version of the matrix of oppression is from 2007. I'm not convinced that Asian would be in the targeted social groups anymore. I think it would be in a borderline group there in the middle. But I'm just going with what this chart is as of right now from 2007. Also targeted is biological women, transgender, genderqueer, intersex people, lesbians, gay men, working class, poor people, people with disabilities, Jews, Muslims, and Hindus. Old people and young people. These are what typically are considered underrepresented groups as of 2007. I think that there would be some shifting around of some of these. I don't actually think older people are targeted groups anymore. I think they would be in the border group, and I don't think it would say young people anymore. I think it would say children. The children are now a marginalized or targeted social group. But be that as it may, this is the chart. Okay, so then what are the privileged groups? Well, much like that memo we saw earlier, it is white people, biological men, Christians, heterosexuals, adults, the rich, upper class, what they called owning class, people who own their own homes. These are the privileged social groups. So in our hiring them, the thought is that we want to give preference to hiring from those targeted or underrepresented groups and slow our hiring of people in the privileged groups or categories. And depending on who your diversity officer is, many would say that these intersections are assumed to be in play in nearly every life situation. The matrix of oppression is the foundational operational assumption. It's sort of the working theory or organizational theory. And it has been now applied to the issue of hiring or student recruiting, board recruiting, any of that sort of thing. And so relationships, conversations, decisions, trainings, board selections all come to be seen through this lens of power dynamics, of who is in the privileged group and who is in the marginalized or underrepresented group. And so these, the critical social theories shaped version of diversity, how this shows up then in things like employment policies, hiring policies, trainings that are done. The usual goals of how do we increase hiring and retention are kind of slightly morphed into how do we increase hiring and retention of historically marginalized and underrepresented groups. So now it becomes important that we have representation from the queer community, as well as from various races. And does hiring an Asian person really count as diversity? Does hiring a Jewish person count as diversity? There is a big, huge debate happening right now among the diversity officer community as to whether or not Jewish people are actually an historically underrepresented community or whether they belong in the privileged category. How do we eliminate prejudicial attitudes or behaviors toward not just everybody in our workplace, but of historically marginalized and underrepresented groups? Well, we put people through what are called implicit bias trainings, microaggression trainings, and we try to reprogram our work culture so that the focus then is on kind of putting the people in the privileged category, you know, helping them to understand their place and to put the people in the underrepresented group, in that group to understand their place. There's another goal in these critical social theories shaped diversity trainings and policies is how do we enhance belonging? Belonging is a new and emerging word for diversity, equity, and inclusion. You might hear that word. You might hear the word accessibility because they're starting to figure out that people are onto them. Diversity is really just a code word for something else. So they're starting to shift the conversation to belonging and accessibility. But how do we enhance belonging and cooperation for historically marginalized groups? Well, we put people through diversity trainings. And again, we are trying to retrain, re-educate, and reorganize people according to these definitions, according to this set of lenses of the matrix of oppression. Unfortunately, where we are right now in the conversation is that what could be a truly noble vision for diversity, maybe how the project started out in the beginning, where we are simply trying to broaden our talent pool with people who have talents and merits and can have the talent and skills to do the job that we need. How do we broaden those applications? How do we tap into areas of recruitment that maybe we're overlooking, helping us to, you know, maybe think about doing blind applicant review? How can we increase and overcome our biases? Okay, how do we increase our procedures so that we are not just automatically falling into our biases? I think that there is a way of doing that because we all, as business owners, want to recruit the best possible talent, right? No matter who they are, what their background is, we want people who can do the job. That at the end of the day, that's what we want. I think that the unfortunate thing is that what maybe started out as a good thing, the I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt of this noble vision. And also, please, again, keep in mind that if you run into somebody who is sympathetic to the idea of diversity, you can connect with them on this level And as you're defining the term with them, you know, what is it? Is it still merit-based? Is it still grounded on talents and skills? I applaud that. I am for that. I am for expanding talent pools. But then you can differentiate between that and the version of critical, the of diversity that seems to be shaped by the critical social theories. And then we get into weird places like Disney wanting to do quotas or making two sets of rules related to plagiarism or some other policy. This is where things just kind of fall in the ditch for me when it comes to diversity. Okay, I hope this has helped you a little bit and will give you some practical ways to engage others in the conversation on diversity. I really would love to hear your feedback about this teaching. If you find this topic interesting, I can continue the conversation next week at this same time, and we will continue to talk about diversity. My hope is that in all of this, you will have some better ways to engage your friends and family who are very pro-diversity, and you can come along and say, hey, here's some things we can agree on, and here's some things where, you know, I sort of part company with you, and continuing to walk with them in that journey. But I wanted to offer kind of all-in-one teaching, you know, sort of this explainer of the conversation so that you can really have better engagement with others. I hope you found this helpful. I do look forward to your feedback. Let me know what you think. And if you would like to hear more on this topic, I can do another teaching next week. Okay, with that, I want to say have a good week and God bless you. Bye-bye.